Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you feeling today?
Doing great. Doing great. We have a special feature today.
And what is that?
I love special features. That's when we have.
I know.
We have one guest that is so cool and so important.
You're putting the spotlight on the entire company.
We devote the entire show to the one company. Because, you know, if you live in Atlanta, there's a lot of peach trees. There's Peachtree Street, Peachtree Road, Peachtree Parkway.
Yes.
But there's only one Peachtree Benefit Group. This morning, I'm very happy to have in the studio with us the folks from Peachtree Benefit Group, Archie Lowe, Jenny Comiskey, and Brett Morris. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So it's true. You do have all these peach trees in Atlanta, but when it comes to benefits, y'all have a great reputation. But we want to let our listeners know what exactly makes Peachtree Benefit Group different. And Archie, you've been in the business a long time. Maybe you can walk us through how Peachtree Benefit Group came about.
Well, thank you very much, Amy. It's a pleasure being here this morning. It's been 30 years of lots of fun being in the benefits business. Peachtree Benefit Group is a neat place to work, and we're excited to be in the benefits business here in Atlanta. We have I call ourselves a boutique benefits organization. We have 15 or so employees, and we specialize in corporate benefits, and we have probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 225 to 250 corporate clients, mainly in the Southeast, but also we're kind of spread out all over the country also.
Now, you said fun and benefits. I'm a little confused.
I know that doesn't make sense.
I'm not understanding how they're connected.
Lee, for some folks, benefits are fun. But, gosh, 30 years, you've seen a lot of change. Yeah. Have you always been in the Atlanta market?
Yes, I started out primarily in the life insurance business and with MassMutual, and have kind of focused and specialized in the benefit arena, and one thing led to another. I remember when I first began selling benefits, the cost of health insurance was roughly $30 for single coverage and $90 for full family. So the times have really changed.
Definitely changed. And, yeah. And you're talking now, $90 wouldn't even be a week.
That's exactly crazy. Right. 90 wouldn't get you a dental plan.
So. Yeah, a lot of changes for sure. And I know our listeners have been curious, and we have gotten a lot of emails lately because it's confusing. Everybody wants to know about Obamacare. What does it mean for me? I know that Peachtree Benefit Group really does specialize in educating their clients and keeping folks up to date on the changes. Any way that you can speak to just generally, what does Obamacare mean to our listeners? Jenny, how about you? I understand you have a lot of expertise in the...
You're the expert in the office?
Well, the local nerd, maybe. I don't know. I do spend a lot of time studying the law and studying all of the laws and all of the healthcare reforms that have,
someone should.
Have come down.
Someone should. It's a big law, right? There's a lot of pages.
It's a big, big law. And that's, you know, I was asked to kind of pare it down to the four major changes coming up or that have come up for your plan. And really, it's so far-reaching. Hard to narrow it down. You know, there are things included like tanning bed taxes and early retiree reinsurance programs and lots of things that reach much beyond just the basic employer-sponsored group plan. But if we're trying to kind of keep it narrow, the major things that have either come up as of the employer-sponsored group plan's next anniversary on or after September 23rd of 2010 – which would be, you know, 10-1 if your plan renewed October 1st, January 1st of this year, if it renewed January 1st, like so many do. The major effects were or are going to be at your next anniversary, the elimination of lifetime limits. So anything within the plan that is limited to a dollar amount per lifetime has been eliminated. The pre-existing conditions for children under 19 years old are going away or have gone away if your plan is renewed. Annual limits are being phased out, but for the most part, they've been eliminated. And you can keep your children on as adults on your plan as a dependent to age 26, and that's regardless of whether they're a full-time student, regardless of whether they're married or have children of their own, regardless of whether they're a tax dependent to you as the employee, just a straight pass to age 26. For plans that have lost their grandfathered status, that's just a straight to age 26. For plans that are still grandfathered, which we can talk about if you want, but that's how complicated this law gets.
It is, especially just even the term grandfathered. What does that mean?
If a plan has not made any changes or does not make any changes or makes changes within certain parameters, which are very narrow, then you can maintain your grandfathered status, and there are certain provisions of the law that don't take effect at this anniversary, at this next anniversary. So of those items that I just mentioned, the difference is for plans that are still grandfathered, if those children, let's say a 25-year-old child of an employee has their own job and has their own insurance available through their own job, then they would not be allowed to continue to the age of 26. So lots of nuances,
now,
When
you have something this complex, is this the responsibility of the consumer to kind of sort this through, or is this where their agent comes in play?
Well, I would say it's the responsibility of the consumer to comply with the law, but certainly this is where agents are critical because this law is so huge, and employers, you know, who make product and sell product, that's the business they're in.
Right.
They're not in this business. We're in this business. So we spend a lot of time learning and
so, but like, how does that kind of drill down to your customers? Like, how do you take this information you've learned and then kind of educate your customers and kind of counsel them in the best way to proceed?
We meet with them personally. We prepare email blasts that we send out when critical pieces of this law are coming due. You know, we send out a lot of information often, and of course, a lot of it probably gets glanced at and tossed aside. So,
well, it sounds overwhelming. I mean, I'm a small business owner, and you know, you just scared me half to death.
Right. And, you know, and we've barely scratched the surface.
That's the part that scares me is that you know, you just did four things, and I know this bill. What is it? Thousands of pages.
2,500 or so.
Wow. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think, and Archie, you can probably speak to this. 15-20 years ago, we didn't really think about having an insurance broker because you could go direct to the provider or direct to the carrier. And now you really do need someone to coordinate your benefits. And Lee, I don't know about you, but I don't want to read a 2,500-page document.
No, I don't.
I'd rather call Jenny and...
Well, it's like I have an accountant. I don't have to know the tax code.
Exactly.
You know, I have a trusted advisor.
Exactly.
And I would
that's
imagine
a good analogy.
That's how your business has evolved. Is that right?
And that is very true. And we... You know, in building Peachtree Benefit Group, we have I've hired people like Jenny. We have CFPs on staff. We have CLUs on staff, CFAs, RHUs, and HR generalists and specialists so that we can help our clients sort out the law and the changes and the you know every week there's new regulations coming down on the law and from the Department of Labor, and it's really quite frightening, and it's something that we try to stay totally you know, ahead of the game, but it's a challenge to us, and it's clearly a challenge to all our customers, and therefore the standard renewal that we go through is way more than just a standard renewal with our clients, because we're having to dovetail that with Obamacare and whether we want to be grandfathered or non-grandfathered, mm-hmm. et cetera. So it's quite a challenge.
I bet. Definitely a challenge. That was a lot of acronyms you threw out there. but the one acronym that it always comes back to is you do handle your clients with TLC. And I think that it really does show when you take the time, like you said, Jenny, to explain whether it's communication through email blasts or just the one-on-one time with employees. A lot of times when people are looking at a job, that's one of the biggest things they look at are the benefits. You know, what kind of benefits is the employer providing? Archie and all of you can probably speak to this. How do you go about letting an employer know how to communicate that to the employees? I mean, some people talk about a hidden paycheck, but it's more than salary. The benefits are becoming more and more important. How do you communicate that through strategy?
Typically, what we will do is offer a number of communication pieces. One of the primary pieces that we use is doing the intranet. We have an intranet site or several different opportunities, intranet-based communication pieces. We also do I call it a glossy brochure, which basically tries to take a 300-page SPD or several SPDs and kind of summarize the entire benefit, the employee's entire benefit package, in a 3 or 4 page.
So you do like a
piece.
Four dummies kind of.
Exactly. It certainly helps us too. Trust me.
Now, is it something that are you doing this proactively for your clients, or is this something the client saying, you know what, I really need help in this area. Can you really work something up that I can explain this to my employees?
That's really a standard operating procedure that we do with our customers. We try to, you know, and we also do open enrollment meetings. We try to do, in-person meetings, which, you know, intranet is good, but not that many people actually go on the computer. So what we try to do is have face-to-face with our customers, and we do open enrollment meetings. And then we basically try to go through the do's and don'ts and really teach our employees, our customers, how to best utilize their health plan.
Beyond just the, you know, what your deductible is, what your co-insurance is,
right,
what your copay is, but, all those things that people know. There are a lot of sort of tricks of the trade, I guess, that help the employees get more out of their plan and not fall into some of the pitfalls that are very easy to fall into.
What would be the pitfall?
Things that they don't realize, like they make an appointment with an in-network physician, and then by the time the appointment rolls around a year later, maybe it was for a general checkup that you make the appointment way in advance, maybe that physician has rolled off the network, and they go anyway because they checked, they knew, and it's all about when you incur the claim. So, you know, always check when you make the appointment, always check before you incur the claim.
Right, and just being a better consumer. I know sometimes when you get prescriptions filled at a certain place, it's more expensive. I mean, that's one thing that having an advocate for you and someone explain to you, you know, that we've had a lot of folks talk about healthcare reform and healthcare in general on the show from the business owner's perspective. And when it comes to our healthcare, we spend less time shopping for our healthcare than we would a TV or a vacation. And that's really changing. I mean, now you see it's getting competitive in the marketplace as far as where you get your prescriptions filled and which physicians are on your network. So having someone explain your plan to you is huge. I mean, Lee, do you know what your insurance plan is and how it works?
No.
It's because you don't have someone that explained it.
Exactly.
I mean, the average person doesn't know what a copay or a deductible is.
Right.
And having someone take that time to explain it to you, wow, what a great benefit. Definitely.
But and you're saying, I don't work for a company that has benefits. My company doesn't offer benefits.
You need to offer benefits, Lee.
Right. But my wife works for a large company, and they just send her like a folder.
Yeah.
Every year. Like, there's never somebody that sits down with her and kind of makes recommendations.
The person
is that common or is that unusual?
It's interesting. The mega large companies that are out in the marketplace really can't reach out to their workforce. And what happens is you really – there is a knowledge gap there. And you know, our predominant marketplace is companies in Atlanta from 50 to 500 employees. So we're able to really add a service that quite frankly is not given to many companies that are large.
And for instance, my brother works for a very large company, and every year at their open enrollment, he calls me because he doesn't really have anyone else to call within his company to explain, you know, the HSA and the HRA and
well, they
all
look similar.
Choices.
To the consumer, I mean, we're not knowledgeable in the ins and outs of this. You know, the employer presents a menu, and they say, do you want, this is what you had last time. Do you want that again? And you're like, yeah, I guess so.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, Lee brought up a good point. He is a small business owner. I know there are some changes that will take effect in 2014. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? I know there's some penalties, some fines, and some folks are saying, you know, I'd rather just pay the fine. What does all that mean?
Well, 2014 is a big year. There's a lot happening between now and 2014 as well. you know, over-the-counter drugs have come off of the eligibility list for FSAs. Reporting on the W-2, the cost of the insurance, which has been postponed for a year because regulations haven't been written, which is the case in many aspects of the law. The regulations haven't been written. The minimum loss ratio takes effect, which we won't spend an hour talking about that, but that's a pretty biggie. The tax for comparative effectiveness research kicks in 2013. Medicare taxes increase. There's a salary cap being applied to executives of health insurers. $2,500 cap on flexible spending plan. Part D subsidy goes away. Lots and lots of stuff are happening here in the next few years that most people, you know, it may not directly impact you as an employee or even your employer's sponsored plan, but it certainly indirectly impacts all of us. Lots of provisions taking place. 2014, that does directly impact everybody, is when the mandate applies to everyone. So everyone must have insurance or pay a penalty. The employers must either purchase insurance, make it available to their employees, or pay a penalty of $2,000 per employee. Additional penalties apply even if an employer does provide the insurance or provide, you know, make it available, but employees go to the state exchange to purchase their insurance, then additional penalties apply to the tune of $3,000 per employee who purchases their insurance through the exchange. Pre-existing conditions, exclusions go away for everyone. Guarantee issue comes into play, which means it doesn't matter if you were just diagnosed with cancer yesterday. If you go buy insurance, they have to issue it to you and can't necessarily charge you more for it. Community rating comes into play, which means the insurers really can no longer do risk assessment and charge appropriate premiums. And the exchanges become established, which are similar to the Massachusetts Connector, if anybody is familiar with that. That was sort of what it's been styled after.
Now, it seems that it's going away from, like, it seems like there's going to be kind of one big person in charge. That's how, I mean, to me. And, you know, if you can, I don't understand the logic of if you can get insurance the day before you need it, like, why would you pay for it any time prior to that?
Very good question.
Yeah,
and that,
it
and
is.
That's, and a lot of employers are saying, you know, well, $2,000 per employee is a heck of a lot less.
That's less than I'm paying
than what
now.
We're paying now, right? Of course, right now, they could cancel their plan and not pay $2,000 per employee. So, you know, employers have plans now without a penalty.
Is it against the law? Do you have to offer benefits? Like, because benefits didn't in a little.
You don't.
Archie.
Right,
I know. It's just me. Archie, you would probably know this being the elder statesman in the insurance world here.
Ouch.
That hurts.
Sorry. Benefits weren't always part of your compensation, right? That happened, what, in the 40s?
In the 40s, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and that was because there was.
That's pre.
That was pre you, pre Archie.
Pre-war, you know,
right.
Vietnam or whatever.
But that was because there was. They weren't allowed to pay more, right? Wasn't there? There was some law that came in place that they were getting around paying more money, so they were offering other things in addition to money.
Right, which was, I think it was a tax. I'm not positive to how that unfolded, but
because you weren't alive,
that's exactly right.
But now it seems like that was a system that was in place, and we all adapted to it. And now they're trying to shake this system up to its core.
Yeah, definitely shaking it up. Now, my question for you, Jenny, is I'm trying not to get too excited about any of it because 2014 is a little ways away, and a lot can happen between now and then. Am I being naive, or do you think it is going to be set in stone?
I do not think it's going to be set in stone, and certainly, if I can say this, I'm hopeful it won't actually get
right.
to where it's going, because there's just so many unintended, perhaps, consequences that are sort of a fallout from this whole thing. And you know, with a mandate to purchase insurance, with the penalty being less money than the insurance would cost you,
mm-hmm.
You know, if the idea was to get more people insured, you're going to have fewer people insured because people are just going to pay the penalty. They know they can wait until they get that bad diagnosis and go buy insurance. So, you know, personally, I'm not even sure I would buy it if I'm perfectly healthy and spend the thousands and thousands of dollars if I know I can wait until
right.
I'm sick to buy
right.
it. So you're going to have lots of people making that decision, particularly if the employers decide to take the $2,000 penalty. If it stops becoming available through the employer, lots of people are just going to say, it's too much trouble, it's too much money, I'll pay the penalty. And you will have massive uninsured. So,
right.
You know, when you have massive uninsured, then you've got all these uninsured employees who are sick more often. They don't get mm-hmm. their preventive care. Their children are sick. Lots of FMLA, lots of disability, bad, you know, lower morale. You've got employers in the business of creating things or selling things, and you've got employees who are now less effective than they were before.
I'm going to turn it around to a positive note. There are some Please. Positive things that are coming around here. You know, you talk about wellness. I do see a push in a lot of companies towards wellness. Now, the average listener may not know what that means when it comes to insurance, but maybe y'all could enlighten everybody. Your employer offers wellness. Why are they offering it? Well, not just because it sounds good, but because it can reduce their insurance premiums. Walk us through how that happens.
Well, I would first like to say that the big problem with health care is the price of health care, and that's why a lot of people are trying, our employers and especially larger employers are specializing or trying to focus on a well or healthy workforce,
mm-hmm.
and it, you know, obviously saves future potential claims. And what we're seeing is just significant push to go toward, you know, wellness thresholds, meaning, you know, if you know you get a discount on your premium if you have your annual physical,
right.
You get a discount on your premium if you attend a smoking cessation
mm-hmm.
program. I mean, and each year we're trying to give new thresholds to the employees to basically incentive the employees
mm-hmm.
to stay healthy, because it makes a difference in the future cost.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, when you talk about health care for someone that is of average weight, not obese, just the states of their health, whether it's being diabetic, mm-hmm. Being insulin dependent. I mean, you think about the pharmacotherapy that goes along with someone that's unhealthy and out of shape. And some of those things are lifestyle choices. So to talk about wellness, any wellness programs you're seeing out there right now that are interesting or talk worthy?
You know, it's interesting. We were just in California yesterday, and the, you know, the I think the statistics are that 70% of all claims annually for most employers are lifestyle related.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a big thing that, and there are a lot of national wellness firms and most of the health carriers that we have relationships with have some really outstanding wellness plans and do it phased in over a 2 and 3 year period.
And this sort of ties in with, you know, the decisions that the employers are going to have to come up with, whether they want to pay the $2,000 penalty or keep their health plan in place. At that decision point, keeping the health insurance plan in place can be a real opportunity for them to introduce these wellness plans, not only to keep their health plan costs low, which is certainly one of the objectives, but just create a culture of health within their employee base and become more effective employees, because they're healthier, they feel better about themselves, their children are healthier, they're living healthier lifestyles. It's all, you know, it helps them sell their widgets too,
right.
Not just keep their health plans cost low.
Definitely.
Do the employees really use those programs? Like, I know it's a nice thing to have. It's like, you know, you join a gym, you're like, oh, I'm going to join a gym because I want to get healthy, but do you really go to the gym?
Well, it's interesting because even with the part of the law that says preventive care, again, this goes back to grandfather status, mm-hmm. but if your plan now is providing preventive care with no co-share, no co-pay or co-insurance, we found from statistics that even when it only costs $15 to go get a checkup or a mammogram, people didn't do it. So you're right. You know, so you make it free. Are they going to do it because it's $15 less? Probably not. And that's why what Archie mentioned about maybe charging people different amounts of premium based on whether they do participate in these health mm-hmm. programs, and even to the point of charging them less in premium if they meet their goals within the health program. Right. So the employer has to really buy into it and be on board with it and promote it and make it a serious, you know, central part of their...
Have you seen that initiative work where you kind of pay a penalty for not going to the gym?
It's kind of just getting started.
It is. It would be interesting in 5 years from now to look at the data on that. I mean, some of the early adopters in Atlanta, we've talked about this before with other guests, like Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. I mean, they have done a huge push, and they actually incentivize in the paycheck. They give them money if they go through smoking cessation. They give them money if they go for their physical. And they have a huge push towards losing weight and getting their BMI down. And when they reach that goal, they get money. I mean, money says a lot. And there's a lot of different contests.
It's a motivator.
Yeah. And, I mean, certain companies have stopped hiring people that smoke. I mean, who ever thought we'd get
really?
To that? Yeah.
And you're allowed to do that?
Yes. In Georgia, you can not hire a smoker. And look at the smoking facility in this building. I held some training here recently.
Right, you have to go out in the parking lot.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, everybody said, we need to get fresh air. And I'm like, fresh air? And then they came back smelling like smoke.
That's code that they have to smoke.
Yeah, and they had to walk like down to Roswell Road to do it. Maybe that's part of the workout.
400 is the smoking area.
You see a great number of employers now that are doing the smoker, non-smoker premiums as a part of their health plan. I think even the state of Georgia is doing that this year.
Yeah, tobacco or non-tobacco. Yeah.
But does that really impact their behavior? Do they stop smoking because of that? Does anybody have any stats?
We're going to talk about that in 5 years. I mean, I really would be interested to know, because some of these companies are 1-2 years into a wellness program, but I got a feeling you're going to look at their premiums.
Well, look, we know for a fact when gas goes to $4, people drive less. Like, people have their pressure points when it comes to certain pricing on things.
And I think if you introduce it ahead of time and say, you know, at the next renewal, we are going to a different premium for smokers versus non-smokers, you've got, you know, 11 months to quit, then they might. That would be a
good behavior. And how do you check if they really quit or not? You're allowed to take blood or, you know?
You might have to have them do the sniff test.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to tell who smokes.
If dogs go by.
Yeah, that's right. It is interesting. A lot going on.
So there's a lot of action in your business, huh?
A lot.
Never a dull day.
But you definitely are different in so many respects. And Brent, you've been so quiet over there.
I'm letting the experts talk.
When it comes down to the day-to-day, you are the one out there handling the clients and talking about their open enrollments and educating them. Maybe talk a little bit about how you're preparing your clients for these changes in healthcare. So when they're hearing about it on the news and they're getting bombarded from all different angles, how do you prepare them and maybe ease the anxiety?
Communication's key. The main thing that we're bringing to the table is going out and talking to clients on a regular basis. For the most part, what we find when we go talk to a prospective new client is they said, you know, I saw my broker last year at renewal, and I'll probably see him a couple of months before my renewal this year. And we haven't heard anything in between. And that's when they're open to talk to us. So we can go out and educate the employer about the changes in healthcare. And also talk to them about the different options, try to be creative with the different options that we bring to the table, whether it be self-insured, fully insured, voluntary benefits. But the main thing that we do is try to come up with a 2-, 3-, and 5-year plan. You don't want, as an employer that's spending, let's say you've got 100 employees, you're spending close to $1 million worth of insurance premium a year. You don't want to get hit with a surprise 40% increase. Nobody budgets for a 40% increase on a $1 million plan each year. So our goal is to go out there and continuously be in communication, go over their claims, help educate the employees on, you know, go to Publix, get your prescription filled for penicillin or antibiotics for free. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It is.
And actually, I think you might have been the one that told me that. I was like, really?
I wish I had been. It was Emmy, and I've got to give her all the credit. And that's the thing is Archie's done a great job of hiring these the folks that are just well-educated, great presenters, and go out and really talk to the end user, the employee. When she goes out and talks to the employee, she's telling them things like, don't go to the emergency room when your child might have strep on a Sunday, you know, go try to find a doc in the box.
Right.
Well, the end result in that is then rather than the insurance company and the employer having to cover the cost of an urgent care or an emergency room visit, they're spending a fraction of that to go to one of these dock-in-the-boxes.
Right.
Those cost savings are passed along to the employer and to the insurance company, and in the end, they go to the employee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. Not many people know that, and that y'all take the time to walk people through that is amazing. What else are you finding as far as we talked a little bit about the wellness earlier, but the healthier lifestyle and habits, and are a lot of your carriers offering that? Like, maybe give an example of how that works so our listeners can understand, okay, a wellness program through, and I'm not even going to name a carrier because I'm not real sure who some of those are that you work with.
I'll give you a little bit of a background. My history is working on the insurance carrier side.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, the couple of carriers that I've worked for have implemented the program in-house. One of the carriers gave an incentive back to the employees. At that point in time, I actually smoked. And at that point,
yeah. We're going to have to ask you to leave.
Silence in the room. And they gave a financial incentive to, you know, go through the cessation program.
Yeah.
And I went through that and got my $10 back,
right,
for going through the program. But quite frankly, I didn't quit smoking. So
you mean I? You're,
no, no, no.
You've I don't.
I don't anymore. But that program wasn't something that made me stop smoking.
Interesting.
So I think what you'll find is you really need to educate the employer, get their buy-in,
mm-hmm,
and explain to them how their workforce is going to be more effective. The employee, that's a tough call because some people just are not going to change habits, even if it means saving an additional $50 a month.
Yeah. And not counting the how much money in cigarettes.
Absolutely.
No
that's
doubt.
The real cost.
But if they're paying more, they'll help fund the programs for those who will participate.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And just even healthier choices. I know a lot of companies are offering healthier options in their vending machines. I mean, mm-hmm, we spend a lot of our work day at work, mm-hmm, at the office.
Right.
I mean, so to be able to grab an apple rather than chips in the vending machine, I mean, it is interesting to see. That is, in my mind, one of the positives of all the healthcare is that they are encouraging people to become more healthy. Because as Americans, we are fat.
We're number one.
We are number one. Woohoo!
You know, one of the best programs that I saw was a large employer who had a cafeteria plan or a cafeteria in-house. And what they would do is charge, you know, $2-3 for a real nice, healthy wrap sandwich or something, mm-hmm, like that, and $8 for a burger. And that helps steer their own employees to a healthier lifestyle.
Sure.
Without penalizing.
Great example. Mm-hmm. It really is. And I know like Kaiser Permanente and some of the others, they have these great workout facilities. You know, you can go to these classes for free.
Wow.
Yeah. Good thing. Definitely.
I'll talk to
Lee
and see if he wants to put in a workout facility for
you. Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah. Actually, I just joined a workout program where if you go for 30 days in a row, you don't have to pay for the month.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, and I'm on day 23. Can I make it?
Wow.
No, but it's funny when and I'm money motivated. So when you tell me I'm going to get something for free, I'm there. You know?
How many people are with you on day 23 there?
Well, I don't
just
know.
You.
I don't know because when I scan my little card, it says, you know, I've been there.
How many days in a row?
23 days in a row.
How much does the month cost?
$69.
$1,000.
But okay.
Impressive.
Now, Johnny, you can definitely understand my rationale here. $69 is a new pair of shoes.
That's
so if I go to the gym, my husband doesn't
30
understand
days
it,
in a row. That's
I was
going to
say if it's 25, you know, I probably wouldn't be that motivated.
$69.
Yeah.
I'll go buy new shoes for going to the gym every day for a month.
Good
what do you
for
think
you.
Of that? Would Abby do that?
No. I mean, it's not. I mean, they want you to go injured, sick. They're incenting the wrong thing.
No, actually, I think they just don't believe that people would actually do it.
They won. I guarantee you it's probably 5% of the people less than that go every day.
Yeah.
No way.
And it's funny because my boss says, well, gosh, Amy, you haven't been traveling much lately.
I can't. I've got to go to the gym. I'm hiring homeless people to go and scan my card. So I saved $60.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's funny.
Amy, if you were my age, you'd break in half if you, after day 15.
Right.
I will say it made spreading 50 bales of Pine Straw on Sunday much easier.
I'm sure.
Really? Do you have to actually exercise or can you just
check in? Go in.
Take a nap.
Shower.
Well, there was that day I spent a lot of time in the steam room. No, definitely, though, incentivizing someone. Some people are money motivated, and some people just like to see the results, whether it's with their own health care. And definitely the employer would like to see the results when they don't see their premiums increasing. What are you seeing as far as an average renewal increase? I know some folks have said, gosh, it's 38% or more. And can you maybe, can one of the three of you give our listeners a snapshot of why that would happen? If you have, say, let's give a scenario. Say 50 employees, a doctor's office, okay?
They're the healthiest people, right, doctor's office?
Well, there are a lot of women. So a lot of people don't understand that when you have a lot of women, especially of childbearing age,
right,
what that may do for your premium. Am I touching
on? Can we use another occupation other than?
How about a manufacturer?
Because usually they're the worst. The worst.
Give me an example. Give our listeners an example, because they really, our listeners do like stories.
Oh, don't use a law firm either.
That's worse.
Typically, you know, it's interesting. Claims really do make a difference. And what we've seen is, you know, lots of our personal clients are getting, you know, very small single-digit increases. We've actually had a pretty good year, knock on wood, for rate increases. However, the ones that are
Those are the healthy groups.
The ones that are not running well really are taking it on the chin, and I think that might be, quite frankly, the insurance carriers posturing for the future and trying to basically keep the good and get rid of the not so good.
Interesting.
So that's what. You know, it's, that's how about that for a not a direct answer.
I mean, we've had groups that have taken a slight decrease, and we've had groups with, what was the recent one, 76% increase.
Yes.
So
wow.
It's really all over the board.
That's a tough renewal to deliver.
Go deliver.
Yeah, I bet it is. But something tells me that through your strategy and your expertise, you can position that so it's not so painful.
Absolutely.
Maybe offering other options or increasing a deductible or offering something different.
We try to leave really no stone unturned and really think outside the box creatively. And when you're getting a huge increase like that, you really have to be creative. But the one thing you don't want to do is wait to 60 days prior to that happening. You've got to really get out and communicate with the client and say, you know, it's not going well, and you know, we need to look at our options. And that's going back to what Brent was saying. You know, you really need to have a 2 to 5 year strategy moving forward, and you need to bring the employees, make them a piece of the decision making, quite frankly, because most of the employers are having to pass on a lot of these increases, and the employees need to be a part of it. Otherwise, they don't understand it, and it's a problem.
What would be a reason that a company's rate would go up that dramatically? Is it some health event that's happening to one of the employees, or is it their carrier they're using has just raised the rates?
Yeah, it seems like they're it doesn't take much to have a $250,000, $500,000 claim. I mean, you can have a premature baby that's 3 weeks premature, and it's a $750,000, $800,000 claim, and there's no way a carrier can take in enough premium to cover those types of risk, and that's it's frightening, and we've seen it seems to be, and also in a down economy, a lot of those things tend to pop up more. It seems like people are, concerned about their jobs, and they're not sure of the future of their job, so they're going and getting checked out, and things aren't, maybe as good as
surgeries they've been putting off.
Yeah.
Right.
That's interesting. I hadn't really thought in those terms, but yeah, the economy probably has affected folks in that.
And talking to several of the carriers, a lot of their they've had a significant, I call it a spike up, and their claims and their block of business across the board. So maybe it's due to the economy.
Well, I guess because the people who have jobs are afraid to leave, right, because they may not be able to get another job. So they stay there, and they're like, well, since I'm here and they cover this, maybe I'll get a thorough checkup, and then they discover something, and then all of a sudden now they have
a huge claim. I might get laid off, so I better get that knee surgery I've been putting off.
Right.
Wow. Great information. My goodness.
Yeah, see that? Unintended consequences. That's the moral of the story.
Great information. Y'all, for the listeners that are thinking, okay, I really do need an expert here, how can they reach you? I'm going to get the website. I know your website's got a lot of great information, Brent.
Sure. They can go to www.peachtreebenefitgroup.com, and benefit is singular. Or they can give us a call in the office at 404-364-4193.
Terrific. And you deal with all sizes of clients? I mean, if someone's only got 10 employees, is that okay to contact you?
Give me a call because I'd be happy to talk to them about it. If it really looks like it would be beneficial to the client and we would be a good fit for them, I'm happy to go to the smaller client. There are times when the smaller client might not be the best fit for us, and we're happy to point them in the right direction. But that's what we're kind of there to do, is help.
Is there an industry that you guys specialize in, or anybody with just X number of employees is
it
good?
It ranges from blue collar to legal to internet companies to foreign companies. We span the United States and different types of industries. So
it's never a dull moment.
That's right. Yeah.
So, Archie, when you founded this, what, 25 years ago, over 25 years ago, is this how you imagined it would be?
I think it's actually better than I imagined it.
Really?
Yeah. It's been never the same day. Mm-hmm. It's a unique unique set of circumstances that are delivered every day, and quite frankly, it's really been a lot of fun.
Learn something new every day.
They're challenges, but it's new and unique every day.
And Jenny, you've been with Brent or with Archie a long time. You've worked with him a long time.
20 years this summer.
Gosh.
Oh, so almost from the beginning.
That's
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that says a lot, too, to the way you mistreat your employees, because they stay around. That's a good thing. Great place to work.
I would like to think so.
No doubt. You created a wonderful company. Great success story for our listeners. For those of you that are listening and thinking you may want to start something, it's never too late,
right?
To all of our listeners, thank you so much for being with us this week. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Have a wonderful week.